Welcome to Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Here's your host, Laura Turner.
Hello and welcome to another special edition of Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. I'm Laura Turner. Our guest tonight is going to tell us a tale of what happens when a little-known Adelaide boy who knows nothing about meteorology scores the gig as the weatherman on the highest-rating breakfast TV show in Australia. And while the spectre of imposter syndrome may have loomed large in the early days, his knack at connecting with people has shone through. It is my pleasure to welcome the accidental weatherman and, of course, the star of Sunrise on Channel 7, Sam Mack, to Great Australian Lives.
Laura, thank you very much for having me on. It's an absolute pleasure to be joining you. It does feel a little bit ominous that the program is sponsored by a funeral company. I feel like maybe this is the death of my career, but only you can save me.
Well, Tobin Brothers are a wonderful company who are very proud of this show. So I'm very sure that they would be very happy to have you on and have us tell your incredible story. As I mentioned in the intro, you are a self-confessed accidental weatherman, and that's the title of your new book. Can you believe where you are now? I mean, it's a busy job. It's big. You know, most people know who you are, but it was an accident.
Yeah, it was, in the sense that I never set out to become a weatherman. I have no formal training in meteorology, and anyone who's seen my segments would probably be aware of that. I'm not known for my in-depth analysis of the weather patterns. If that's the kind of weather you're looking for, then I'm probably not your guy. But I really, and in the book, I talk about how I just stumbled into this career. And I think I wanted to call it accidental weatherman because I think a lot of people, regardless of what your career path is, have accidentally stumbled into a job or a career or a position that they really never envisioned being a part of their life. And I think that's something that most people have experience with. So when I got the job as the weatherman, most of the messages I got from friends were not messages of celebration. They were like, "You don't know anything about the weather. Is this a clerical error? Is there a mistake here? Are we missing something?" And I think they're still baffled by the fact, and they often forget that I'm a weatherman. We'll be out, you know, having a bite to eat or something. They'll be talking about the weather and it'll take them a few minutes to go, "Hang on, shouldn't you know this stuff?"
No, apparently not. Now, as you mentioned, you're a weatherman. You've got a history in radio and stuff as well. What was behind writing a book, though? I mean, what made you think, "I've got enough material here for a book that people are going to read"?
Well, my job really is about people and travel. So that means that I meet all walks of life, and I'm in a unique position with my role in the sense that the other members on our show are in a studio and are not going to Toowoomba, are not going to the local cricket clubs, are not doing these walks around Uluru and meeting people face to face, whereas that's what I'm doing on a weekly basis. So naturally, you just collect stories on those travels. I've been to over 800 places around Australia, and I say places because they're not all towns. Some of them are literally, you know, we've pitched a tent in an outback area near a mountain, or we've been to a local swimming centre, or whatever it might be. But I feel that in my almost 6 years in this job now, I have really got a snapshot of Australia and the people of Australia. So the book is my story, but it's really the stories of some of the amazing, interesting, inspiring characters that I've met on my travels.
Yeah. And I'm someone who works in television as well, and I wouldn't travel as much as you, but I certainly know that life of going to just the most, you know, places you've never heard of, and the smallest possible places you can think of, and often it's those places where you have the most fascinating time and you learn the most, and then they're people that you don't forget. You've obviously found that.
100%, because I think that, you know, we live in the cities, and most of the audience live in the cities. So TV and radio is just a normal thing. It's not as exciting. But as soon as you go an hour out of any city, I find people are a bit more excited that you're there, that you're in their town, that you're in their cafe, that you're, you know, at their local club rooms or whatever it might be. And you mentioned small towns, that there is a part of the book. We did a segment a few years ago called Australia A to Z, where towns or places needed to nominate why we should visit them for their letter. And it was amazing. We had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, and it became almost like mini Olympic bids. They were really like, you know, putting videos together, getting creative, making signs. We loved it. But we didn't even think about the fact that when we got to the letter X, there's only one town in the whole of Australia that begins with the letter X, and it's a tiny town called Xantippe. It's in Western Australia. It's in the Wheat Belt area, about 3.5 hour drive from Perth. And the last time they had a census poll there, the population was 18 people because it's essentially a couple of farms, a couple of wheat farms adjoined to each other, and that's Xantippe. And I remember having the discussion with my producer, Sean Flynn, the human emoji, I call him. And I said, well, I guess this decision has been made for us. We're going to Xantippe. The challenge was the day prior to that, for the letter W, we were in Wagga Wagga. So this might shock you, Laura, but there's no direct flights from Wagga Wagga to Xantippe.
Really?
In fact, there's no flights to Xantippe. So in one day, and this gives you a bit of insight to my life and the craziness of the travels. In one day of travel, we had to go from Wagga Wagga. We flew from Wagga to Sydney. We waited an hour and a half. We got on a connecting flight from Sydney to Perth, which is obviously a long flight, the other side of the country. And then we got off that flight and we drove 3.5 hours to Xantippe. We got there at 2 a.m. We did the show. Because of the time difference, 3 hour time difference in WA, we were on air from 2:30 local time. I'm having flashbacks to it now, PTSD. But what blew me away about it was we had over 100 people there in Xantippe because
Where'd
all of the surrounding
from?
Towns.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. They came from what the way they described it was just down the road, which we later found out was an hour drive. So the local towns were so gobsmacked that Sunrise was visiting Xantippe that they wanted to be a part of it. So we had an extremely memorable morning. We learnt about the history of the farms and the beautiful, you know, the third generations came down and they showed us photos of what it used to look like. Spoiler alert, used to look exactly the same. They gave me a bouquet of wheat. We had views of the fields. We stood on a rock. And Xantippe, we put a flag on top of the rock in Xantippe to mark our territory, almost like a moon landing. And it's one of the most special travel experiences I've had.
Now, chapter two of the book, Sam, is called People. And we've talked a bit about, obviously, with Xantippe, the incredible people that you meet. Chris Grigg, though, was someone who you've talked about having really touched you. He's a gentleman who was diagnosed with MND and a huge fan of you and the show you work on. What was it about his story that stuck with you?
Well, I'd never met someone with MND. Obviously, I was aware of it. But I'd never met someone face to face and met their family. And when I did that with Chris, I think it just stuck with me and it affected me because it made me think about what if that happened to me? What if that happened to people that I love, you know, my parents, my sister? How do you deal with this slow killer, which is effectively what MND is? There's no cure for it at the moment. So that was the first thing that made me, I guess, feel interested to share his story. Number two, he was a really funny guy and a really, even with his challenges of what he's going through with MND, he was sharp. He would make jokes about Koshi and Port Power, and I love that. So we connected over humour. But also he's from a sporting background, and so am I. He was a great footy player for Norwood, the Redlegs in South Australia. He had a gym. He was a big guy. He's like, I've met so many people like him around sporting clubs, and they're great. They're the fabric of sporting clubs. But then suddenly he's lost all of this weight. He's lost the ability to speak at the pace that he would normally speak. And his beautiful wife, Samantha, was just handled it in the best possible way. She decided that they are going to make the most of every day and do everything on their bucket list and because they don't know how long they have. And I really admire that attitude. The other thing that I really connected with Chris was he was campaigning. He was fundraising. Despite what he was going through himself, he was putting on these fundraising nights, raising $15,000 in a night at the footy club because of all of his connections. He was campaigning to get better, rights and circumstances for people who are going through it, to people to be able to spend more time at their home with their loved ones rather than being in facilities. I just thought that is a true champion. That is someone who deserves to have their story shared and deserves credit. And I'm so glad that I did. And I now class him as a friend. And, you know, I had my book launch in Adelaide with so many friends, and he came along to that. And that was really special to have him there. And look, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I've seen him deteriorate in the time that I've known him. And when he was at my book launch, he was in a wheelchair. And that was tough for me to see because I didn't know that he was in a wheelchair. I just saw him and he was in a wheelchair. But that reminds you how fast MND can work, and how important it is that we fundraise, that we increase this awareness, and that we keep chipping away to one day finding a cure for it. And that's why he supports Neil Danaher's amazing work with Fight MND, and all the footy clubs get behind that. And I just think he deserves credit. And that's just one person. I meet inspiring, interesting people who have stories that deserve to be shared. And I'm really proud that I could put that in my book.
Yeah, and it's a real privilege for you to be able to use your position to help people like that. Absolutely a real privilege for working in television. This is Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. And Tobin Brothers offer a range of very practical solutions to help you plan a funeral and pay tribute to your loved one. For more information, tobinbrothers.com.au. And our guest is accidental weatherman Sam Mack, and he'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Our guest tonight is TV personality Sam Mack, who's written about his adventures travelling around Australia in his new book, Accidental Weatherman. And it's, of course, how one man's job showed him the best of Australians and brought out the best in him. Now, Sam, before the break, we were talking about how you are able to meet incredible people and use your position to help them and you know, and boost the profile of issues in Australian society. One of them, of course, being men's health awareness, and you did that with the Full Monty. You were one of eight celebs to take part of a show, which was huge, and do the Full Monty. How was that?
Well, I must say I'm delighted that when talking about the Full Monty, you just used the word huge. Thank you, Laura.
Well, you were standing alongside an Iron Man and an international model in Chris Smith, so who knows who I was talking about.
Oh, yeah, and to the other side of me was another Iron Man / model, Jet Kenny.
Oh,
so
great.
They really helped me out by flanking me with two specimens like that. It felt like a bit of a stitch-up, to be honest.
Yeah.
Look, it was something that I said no to initially. I was worried that, I don't know, it just sounded a little bit smutty, and I work on a family show with Sunrise, It's just not quite me, and I had my reservations about it. And then they had done a version of the show in the UK, and my manager, Melissa Harvey, sent me a little, I guess, preview of that, and it completely changed my mind because it was actually more about the cause and the reason that they're doing it. And any nudity was kind of cheeky. There was nothing, you know, too gratuitous and in your face, and it was all handled, I felt, in a classy way but with a good message behind it. So that got me on board. Having said that, it was one of the most traumatic experiences of my life. I had 6 weeks of not eating carbs. No bread, no beer. I had my first spray tan. Oh, my goodness.
Of course.
Well,
You can't tan it.
Yeah, that's right. I said I selected one called Subtle Glow. But then, of course, producers being producers, they picked one called Fijian Chocolate Mousse, which was not a subtle glow at all. But, so I was certainly tanned for the appearance.
But the experience
of the real Full Monty was incredible. Not only did we talk about men's health from a perspective of encouraging men to get prostate checks, because that was a big message behind it, men of a certain age to go to the doctor and to get those checkups. I did it on the condition that I could also talk about mental health in there, because I think that ties in, you know, to any type of men's health. Mental health is one of the most important things that men need to be speaking more about. So credit to the producing team, because they did allow me to have that time within the show to touch on that. And I had so many beautiful messages from people who were watching it as a family and started having conversations as a result of it. Or the other part of it was, wives saying, I've been trying to get my husband to go to the doctor for years and he hasn't done it, but that show convinced him. So it was worth it.
Now, yeah, absolutely. I think there are so many women out there that could agree with being in that position. It's still an issue in Australia, but I think with the help of people like you, it would be improving. I want to talk about you too. As I mentioned in the intro to the show, you were an Adelaide boy. What was it like growing up in good old Adelaide in your early years?
I loved it. I grew up in suburban Adelaide, nothing too fancy. I'm a big soccer player, so I was very passionate about training. And, you know, I represented Australia at international level schoolboys soccer, which I always drop into conversation whenever I can. I got paid to play soccer. It was a big part of my life and still is. but Adelaide life was great. It was very comfortable. My beautiful family and my sister Paula and my mum and dad, they didn't have a lot of money, but always did the best to get me to those sporting camps and those types of opportunities. I had great friends. But I think as soon as I started to get a taste of media and, you know, creating my own radio shows, I just knew that I wanted to challenge myself against the best. And I felt that the best were in Melbourne and Sydney, really. That's where the big shows were produced out of. So I left Adelaide in my early 20s. And as much as I love Adelaide, it was one of the best decisions I've made, because I needed to be able to chase this career that I'm now doing.
Yeah. And you'll never forget or change or deny your roots, that's for sure. Were mum and dad passionate or supportive of the career path that you chose?
They were. They were a little bit surprised when I was at uni. I was actually studying psychology at uni when I started to get a little bit of volunteer radio work. And that meant, as you would know, sometimes panelling, pushing the buttons for the radio shows and the mid-dawn shift. So starting at midnight through till 6 a.m. and I was panelling and I was doing it for free. And my parents were like, "Your psychology degree is more important than this. Why are you pushing buttons over a cold chisel song with a whisper in the middle of the night? How's that going to help your career?" But it did, because it got me in the door and it got me some contacts, and then I started to get some paid shifts, and then I started to get some segments on the air, and you just kind of work through it from there. But they had their reservations. But as soon as they could see that I was serious about media and that I was going to put in the hard yards, they absolutely backed me. And my dad's a bit of a performer. He played in bands. He'd always pop up on radio shows. So, you know, any chance he gets to steal the limelight from me, he'll try to do that as well. So, yes, they were very supportive, and I'm very lucky.
Yeah. You're known as a bit of a larrikin. Is that where it comes from your dad?
I think it's half mum, half dad. So dad is a larrikin. He's Northern Irish, and, you know, I don't mean this in an offensive way, but Northern Irish people, particularly Belfast, a little bit nuts. And dad's definitely got a bit of that about him. Loves a drink, which is, you know, that's great. Whereas mum is much more considered and is much more thoughtful and the heart, you know, and a bit quieter generally. So I like to think that I got the best of both of them, and I try to use both of those, I guess, skills and assets in my life, my career.
Now, you you did something wonderful for your parents just on that Irish heritage. They'd never been back to Ireland, and you actually gifted them that trip of a lifetime. That must have been a wonderful thing to feel that you could do for your parents.
I still get goosebumps when I talk about it or think about that. My parents are both from Northern Ireland. They met in Australia, but a big part of why they left and when they left were the troubles in Ireland. You know, it was a very dangerous place. And when they moved to Australia and moved to Adelaide and everything was peaceful, they kind of turned their back on that and didn't want any part of religion or any of those troubles that they'd left behind. So for many, many years, they had no interest in going back to Ireland. But then I guess as the years, decades go past, it would start to drop into conversation, and it was always one day. And I think a lot of people can relate to this. You know, you talk about one day we're going to go and do that. One day I'm going to take mum and dad to do so. If you can take one thing from my interview tonight, is that one day might not arrive. Yeah. Do it today. Book it in now. We're seeing more than ever with COVID that things can be taken away from us. Yeah. This was obviously before COVID that we had this holiday. But look, it was expensive, and I kind of ended up taking my sister as well, because she'd never been to the UK. And it was a family holiday that is, and I say this in the chapter that I write about in the book, it's the best thing that I've ever done. And I've done so many incredible, special things, but to have that time and to see my parents' faces as they get back to their homeland for the first time in 30, 40 years, to see them get excited to point out, "That's the school I went to," or, "Dad, I had my first beer at that pub. You know, that's where we grew up." To have those experiences with my family and my sister there as well was something that I always smile when I think about. And we always, you know, laugh and talk about that trip together. We went to the Guinness factory and we were singing along to all these old Irish songs. And it's just, there's a real lesson in there, and that is to do those things for the people you love and the people you care about today. Because, you know, we talked about Chris Grigg earlier with MND. You don't know when something is around the corner. So make the most of these opportunities while you have them.
Yeah, absolutely. Where were you in your career when you did that?
I was working with Sunrise, and it was difficult to get that time off because, you know, you don't get a lot of holidays during the year and when the ratings periods are on. But yeah, credit to my boss, Michael Pell, he allowed me, I think it was 9 days. So I had basically a week over there, and then I got back, landed in Sydney, and then went to another part of the airport to fly directly to Uluru because I was live from Uluru the next day for the show. So it was chaotic, but it was honestly one of the best things I've ever done. Probably the best.
Yeah, I can well imagine. As you say, you'd go back to those memories with your family all the time.
Yeah.
You mentioned your sister. Does she work in the media as well, or what does she do?
No, my sister, she works with animals, and I'm a big animal person as well. I do a bit with animal rescue as a Sambassador. My sister works for the RSPCA in South Australia. And this is another cool lesson that I think people might take something from. She was working, I guess, in dry cleaners and a few chocolate stores, and something that she wasn't overly passionate about, but I knew how passionate she was about animals. And I remember about 4 or 5 years ago sending her links to a few animal care courses that you can do, just little short courses. And she was a little bit uncertain. She didn't have the confidence. She wasn't sure if she could turn that into a career path. But fast forward a year or so, she got her qualifications. She got some voluntary work initially with the RSPCA, and now she's working almost full time with them. And it's tough because you're seeing animals that sometimes are abandoned and in a bad way and maybe aren't getting the love they deserve. And as an animal person, of course, you want to give them all that love, but it's just not realistic. So she has tough days, but she also has the most rewarding days, and she's working towards something that means something to her. So I'm really proud of her for, I guess, taking that leap of faith and studying and getting the qualifications to now, you know, contribute in an area that means something to her. So I think that's another nice lesson in there. Again, to just, if you're not feeling it, if you're not in the career that's really connecting with you, try. You can take a leap of faith and do a course, or try to step out of it.
Yeah, I think a lot of people can relate to that thinking at the moment. This is Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. And in these challenging times, Tobin Brothers offer a range of very practical solutions to help you plan a funeral and pay tribute to your loved one. For more information, tobinbrothers.com.au, and more with Sam Mack in just a moment.
You're listening to Great Australian Lives with Laura Turner for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
Welcome back to Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. I'm Laura Turner. Our guest tonight is the accidental weatherman, Sam Mack, who, with absolutely no experience as a meteorologist, landed a job as the weatherman on Breakfast TV, clocking up a remarkable 25,000 minutes of live TV in over 800 different Australian towns doing live crosses on Sunrise. Now, Sam, before we get to the fascinating story of Coco the cat, who is a bigger personality than you are, I want to know one thing, because I remember presenting the weather as a very young, budding news reporter on Wind Television, and I had to stick the microphone to my chest back in those days in Ballarat. You actually had to masking tape the microphone to your chest. And after I did the weather, it was my first live weather, people started ringing in saying, what was that noise coming through my television? There was this awful thumping sound, and it was really distracting. And we worked out I was so nervous that my heartbeat was actually thumping through the microphone. And I wondered if you have had a similar incident in your early days where you just could curl up in a ball if you thought about it now.
That is amazing. I haven't had that particular thing happen with the heartbeat, but I've definitely had moments. But the thing with me is I embrace the moments where things go wrong. You know, for example, there was I don't like rehearsing things before we do them on air, if possible. Yeah. I like it to be natural and spontaneous. And we had one where I was with a lady named Ali, who was, I think, Australian strongwoman champion on the Gold Coast. And we agreed before the segment that she was going to bench press me above her head because she's an absolute unit, very strong lady.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of shows, a lot of presenters would rehearse that. But I said, no, let's just do it for real.
So we do it.
She starts to lift me up. She gets me above her head. But as she gets me above her head, I may have weighed a little bit more than she expected. So the balance starts to go off and it's almost like I'm going to one side and she's worried about dropping me. So to even that balance, she can only grab one place. And her hand just goes plonk. And this is live on air. And it's right in the shot of the camera as well. You just see her hand go plonk in that one place. And I think I squealed and said, oh, buy me a drink first, Ali. But that's the thing. It's like when things go wrong and the hosts absolutely lost it. And then, of course, they played slow motion replays of it and it became this thing. And everyone was sending me screenshots. And I don't know, I guess... Another example, which I talk about in the book, was we're at a place called Doggy Daycare in Sydney, and I could hear the hosts laughing. I can't actually see the hosts while I'm live on the air. I've only got an earpiece in and I can hear them.
Yeah.
And I hear them laughing, and I hadn't said anything funny. It was a pretty standard chat, but they were really laughing. And then Koshy said, Sam, turn around. And I turn around, and there's two dogs just absolutely doing what dogs do when they like each other.
Yep.
So, of course, I try to, tidy up the segment and I say, let's go to the weather, which means the graphic comes on while I read the weather forecast.
Yeah.
We separate the dogs. They do the walk of shame. And then we come back and I'm chatting with the host. And unbelievably, 15 seconds into it, they run back into the same spot and do the same thing again. The hosts start laughing again. And then while this is happening, and we're trying to separate these two, while this is happening, another dog walks around the back of them and does doggy business on the ground.
Oh, no.
On the ground. So this is, it's like a Shakespearean four-part play. And it's, oh, my goodness. I had at the time I was like, oh, am I going to be in trouble here? How many codes have we breached in this segment? And I think I said something to the effect of, we're getting more action in this segment than we've had on Farmer Wants a Wife, because we were. But that went viral, and then it was news articles, and people replayed it. And what I'm finding is the more that things go wrong, the more
Absolutely.
The audience love it.
We find that on the news all the time. If a big bird appears behind Hitchy, everyone's tuning in to watch. Absolutely. But I want to talk about Coco the cat. Now, you share the spotlight with Coco. She's on the front page of your book, Accidental Weatherman. She's modelled in TV commercials. She has an Instagram following that's huge. What is the story with Coco?
She's catching me with Instagram followers, which is concerning when the trajectory of your cat's career is going in a much higher position than your own. I was living in Perth and rescued her, and she was skin and bones. She had been left at a house, emaciated. She had no owner, and the vet actually suggested that if she'd been there for another week or two, she probably wouldn't have survived because she had no source of food and she had no one looking out for her, no cover. But it was amazing. I'd never been a cat guy. I'd always been a dog lover, but I just bonded with her, and I just found her. She's a Burmilla, so that's half Burmese, half chinchilla, and they're a very irreverent cat. They're very human dependent. They are very dog-like in their mannerisms and their behaviours. And I just started featuring her in my YouTube videos and my segments. And because she looks so unimpressed with everything I do, it just made it funny. So she started to get a bit of a following, almost like a bit of a grumpy cat type thing where people would share photos of her. And honestly, I've had her for over a decade now. And she, for many years, I've referred to her as the love of my life. I can't do that anymore because I do have a beautiful girlfriend named Rebecca who might be listening to this, who is my new love of my life and the only love of my life. So Coco is the former love of my life, but she's very special.
How does Coco feel about that?
Well, as long as she's getting gourmet chicken, she's fine with everything.
She'd need it if she's only got one tooth. How does she? I'm picturing like a pirate eating their gourmet chicken.
There is
How
a lot of
ar.
The jaws are very strong. I didn't know this. Dr. Chris Brown, my friend, was telling me, name drop alert, that even with no teeth, cats and dogs generally can eat meat absolutely fine. Their jaws can kind of adjust to it and they'll be okay. But yes, she has 13,000 Instagram followers at Life of Miss Coco. She has had some inquiries about a few campaigns coming up for this year. She was the first ever cover cat for a magazine called Puss Week, which is an actual magazine.
You know that was your magazine.
It's a real magazine. Google
but
it.
But you
actually,
made
Google
that.
It. No, I swear it is a real magazine by a lady named Bexy McFly. The name is made up, Bexy McFly, but Puss Week is the magazine. When we launched Coco's magazine cover of Puss Week, we had her arrive in a mini convertible with the song Jenny from the Block playing, because she used to have a little, now she has a lot. And she never forgets, you know, she started from the bottom, now she's here. She's a rags to riches story, and I'm very proud of her.
Is she back with Ben Affleck?
No, she's way too good for him.
Right. Now, you mentioned the love of your life, and hello if you're listening, but it must be hard on your girlfriend if you're, what, your alarm. I mean, I would imagine you're away a lot, but when you are home in Sydney, the alarm's going off, I'm imagining 3 a.m. I don't know if I could have that kind of a commitment to someone like you. I'm sorry, Sam. I'm so sure you're charming, but 3 a.m.
Look, that's a reasonable concern. I get that. Look, the other thing that probably makes it worse for her is I set multiple alarms. I'm one of those people. That
I'm one of those people too. It's shocking.
Are you? How many do you set?
Oh, I reckon there'd be five.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, I set three. So then I have, you know, the preliminary alarm, then the this is your last chance, then the non-negotiable. And I actually have saved in my phone a little note next to the final alarm that says, do it for Koshy.
Yes.
Look, she's really good with it. She's quite an early riser herself. She's normally up by sort of five-ish, so it's not that obscene to her. So, look, it is part of it. It is what it is, and I can't do anything about that because they're the hours I'm working.
It's Rebecca, isn't it? Or Beck.
Yeah.
Is she cool with the spotlight?
She is kind of used to it in her sense because her brother is Scotty James, who is, you know, a champion snowboarder, Olympian.
Yeah.
He was a flag bearer, Warrandyte boy. So she has actually done a lot of work with Scotty on his, you know, branding and marketing and organizing his interviews and planning his structure for where he's going. So she's had a taste of it. Obviously, Scotty is in the limelight a lot, so she knows a bit about that. She always says, look, I'm more of a behind-the-camera person. I completely disagree. I think she's too beautiful to not be in front of the camera. And, you know, and I want to show her off. I love sharing her with, you know, people have an interest in what I'm doing in my life. And I love sharing the things that we do. So thankfully she's been okay with that. But she is very much, actually she came to my Sydney book launch and I didn't know that this was going to happen, but Koshy took the microphone at one point and started just talking about the book and talking about me. And then he said, oh, now I'm going to have a chat with Sam's beautiful girlfriend. And so Beck hadn't even met a lot of these people. And then Koshy's interviewing her, you know, really grilling her, like, what do you see in Sam? And everyone's like, yeah, what does she see in him? But thankfully she gave a nice answer. She handled it very, very well. She's one of those people that doesn't seek the spotlight, but when it lands on her, she's absolutely fine.
She shines. That is beautiful. Just like you, I think it's fair to say. This is Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funeral, celebrating lives. And, of course, visit tobinbrothers.com.au for more information. Our guest is Sam Mack, whose new book, Accidental, Weatherman, is in stores now. And we'll wrap things up with Sam in just a moment. Welcome back to Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funeral, celebrating lives. I'm Laura Turner. Our guest tonight is weatherman Sam Mack, star of Sunrise and author of his memoir, aptly titled Accidental Weatherman, how one man's job showed him the best of Australians and brought out the best in him. I'm sure your mum, Loretta, would be so proud of you, Sam. It's a cliche thing to say, but a beautiful thing to do when you actually took her to the Logies when you were a Gold Logie nominated personality. That must have been a big perk for Mum.
Yeah, it was. It was 2019 when I was nominated for the Gold Logie, and as a Gold Logie nominee, you do get to take a guest.
I'm surprised you didn't take Coco.
I did take Coco. We did. We had Coco on the red carpet. There's photographs. Graphic evidence of that. First cat ever to attend the Logies. I talk about that in the book. Now, if that doesn't sell a few copies, I don't know what will. So, look, I took my mum, number one, because I wanted to thank her for all the work she's done for me behind the scenes and over the years, and I wanted to give her a taste of my work life and my career. And number two, I couldn't get a date. So, so Loretta was a wonderful date. It was so cool. I surprised her on the air on the Friday on the show saying, Mum, you're my plus one. So then she had Friday in the Rundle Mall in South Australia.
I was just going to say, did she appreciate that, having no outfit? I would have that would have annoyed me.
She didn't love that, but she's kind of used to that with me. I'm always surprising her. Yeah. Like, you know, there was time she was in Sydney. We went for a walk. We were going for lunch. And then I surprised her and said, oh, by the way, we're climbing the Sydney Harbour Bridge today. And she's like, I'm wearing the wrong shoes.
Yeah, God.
So when it came to the Logies, I guess because I live in Sydney and I'm traveling all around, and often when I'm back in Adelaide, it's for a dinner. You know, I'm back for 20 hours in Adelaide. They don't get to see a lot of my life, and I felt this was a really special night for me, and how great that I can take my mum there so she gets a taste of, you know, she meets Koshy and Barrett's and Nat and the team and my producer and all the other TV personalities that she watches. And I just, Delta Goodrum, oh my goodness, she almost a restraining order to keep my mum away from Delta Goodrum. She thinks she knows her. I'm like, mum, you've never met Delta. She's like, oh no, but I've seen her interviews. I'm like, yeah, that doesn't mean you know her. She doesn't know you. You're watching one side of that screen, mum. Anyway,
I'm sure Delta would security, have been sweet though.
Security sorted that out. Yeah, she's lovely. But it was great. It actually calmed my nerves. I think it made me think more about mum having a fun night as opposed to me having a fun night, or me worrying about, do I win? What am I going to say if I win? All of those things. And the other part, and I do talk about this in the book, the other part that really, I guess, was the icing on the cake for me was mum wrote a really beautiful message the next day talking about how much it meant for her to be there and how proud she was and all of those things. And that she was wearing an emerald ring that my nan, who's passed away, had given to mum. So she matched it with her dress, and she said, so nan was there with us as well.
Oh,
and
that's lovely.
It made me quite emotional, and it just showed me that it did mean a lot to mum and to my family. And, yeah, it was a very, very special occasion.
Oh, well, I'm so glad you did that for her. And the book, where can we find it? Accidental Weatherman. I'm sure it's in stores. How do people get their hands on it?
It is in stores. It's in most bookstores have it, you know, your Dimmicks and the chains. But if it's not in your local independent store, you can just ask them. They'll very easily order it in if you want to support the local independents, which is always a great thing to do. You can get it via Booktopia if you just want to order it online. I've also done the audiobook myself. I voiced the entire audiobook. So if you think you can tolerate 6.5 hours of my voice, good luck. But, yeah, that's there as well as an option via Audible.
Beautiful. Well, of course, and if you're listening tonight and you want to follow Sam on other channels other than his book, of course, you can use social media to find him too. I think you mentioned before you've got a YouTube channel as well. And if you've enjoyed our chat with Sam Mack tonight, you can share it and with a friend by subscribing to the Great Australian Lives podcast. Thank you for being with us, Sam Mack. It has been a lot of fun.
Thank you, Laura. I really enjoyed it. I appreciate you having me on the show. And a big thank you to Tobin Brothers Funerals as well. I need them after some of my jokes on Sunrise.
Of course, Tobin Brothers, lovely people there. This is Great Australian Lives. And, of course, join me the same time next week when we celebrate another Great Australian Life for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating life.
You're listening to Great Australian Lives with Laura Turner for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Thank you.